And you can tag the points. So one of the points was tagged with, you know, the tag elephant many, then elephants yes, and name the Edo Elephant Repository. And then lastly, it was sort of tagged as being tourism information. The particular dot that this refers to is presumably a tourist information booth, and there are many elephants nearby, and someone else has tagged this with elephants as yes. That sounds sort of redundant and duplicate, which tends to happen a lot in the OpenStreetMap world. You get, since all the tag names are really freeform and the tag values are freeform, it could be a Boolean, it could be the word many, it could be a number. You get all kinds of variety with the tag values. I'll talk a bit more about this and some of the challenges this poses when you're actually trying to use the data. So in OpenStreetMap, the data from the editors to the servers is transferred as XML. This is an example of the XML for that point we were just looking at. It's saying there's a node, there's a latitude longitude coordinates for that node. It talks about the users that have edited the node. And then the tags that I had mentioned, just key value pairs. So now where does some of this data come from? I showed you, as I said, there's over 100,000 contributors. You can collect GPS traces, local knowledge. People, you know that there's a pub at the corner of Laurier and Main, and you've been there, and you see on the map the corner of Laurier and Main. You can go and add the pub to the map just by, you know, clicking on the point where you know this place is, and you've added the pub to the map without ever editing it or having to go there and collect a GPS trace. We also do bulk imports. Some government data sets and some private data sets are released under licenses that are compatible with the OpenStreetMap license. Those can and are often do get bulk imported into the database. And then lastly, people can trace off of satellite or aerial imagery. So most of the data, now I'm not sure if this is, at least in terms of the time spent adding data, comes from GPS traces. A GPS is going to give you about 3 to 5 meters of resolution or accuracy. If it's a good GPS and you have good satellite coverage and you're careful as to how you use the GPS, you're going to get about 3 to 5 meters. You take your GPS, you go out, you go to visit some places. Often when people are mapping with their GPS, they will take a camera along and they will photograph where they're going, and they will sync the GPS timestamps up with the camera photo, the timestamps in the images. Other people will use a notebook or an audio recorder and record what it is they see as they're running around collecting data. And then they go back to the editors, add in the GPS traces, tag up what they've seen, and upload it to the map. Another way is tracing aerial imagery. Aerial imagery refers to both pictures taken from satellites, such as the Landsat satellites or other public satellites that are releasing their images under terms that are compatible with OpenStreetMap, or aerial imagery. A lot of the Yahoo and Google imagery is actually taken from airplanes over big cities. Yahoo has said to OpenStreetMap that you can take any of our aerial images and you can use them to trace or derive data from them, and you're allowed to use that as part of OpenStreetMap. That's not a general permission for anyone to trace off of Yahoo images for any purpose, but if you want to trace Yahoo aerial images, add the data to OpenStreetMap, you can then take that data from OpenStreetMap and use it for any purposes, as long as you're complying with the terms of the OpenStreetMap license. What you do when you're chasing images is you similar to GPS traces, you import the image into the program. It talks to Google. The software will talk to the Yahoo servers and download the images. You can drag your mouse over a point, draw lines, draw boxes around the outline of buildings or parks, whatever it is you happen to feel like mapping or that looks worth mapping on the image. In terms of data imports, OpenStreetMap uses, as I mentioned, the Creative Commons share-alike license. Any public domain data sources can be imported, and many unrestricted use data sources can be imported as well. In the U.S., they have this Tiger data set and the VMAP Zero data set, which are Tiger is a map of the United States. It has very good coverage in terms of almost everywhere in the country is covered. The data quality is very hit and miss. It's not unusual for people to find issues, where the data is wrong by many hundreds of meters. But this data has all been imported, and if you go to the OpenStreetMap map of the U.S., you will see a mostly complete site. And people are always improving that data. In Canada, we have something similar. Yes?
When you find something that's wrong with, say, Tiger, do they have a process for sending in the corrections?
To Tiger, no. You can fix it on OpenStreetMap. There is not a way I know of Tiger getting it back. I know the geo-based people in Canada are trying to do exactly that. We are still importing their data into OpenStreetMap. Once it's there, they want to come up with a way of where they can monitor for changes and figure out where they have to send the trucks again to remap an area.
When Tiger comes up with another version of the data, how are you going to merge the new version with the version you modified?
I have not worked on the Tiger myself, but I have worked on the GeoBase. Our plan with the GeoBase is that each node element in GeoBase, and I think Tiger is the same, has a unique ID. And we're adding these unique IDs as tags. And I think the Tiger people did this, but I'm not sure. And since we know where a road came from in OpenStreetMap, and we can look at the changes in the data update from the provider, if we see something's changed in the provider, if no one has manually fixed it in the map, we can then apply that change. Scripts need to be written, but it's quite doable. Yep.
In your editing tools, is it possible to see things like history of a particular point? This came from Tiger and was edited by...
The history is all maintained. The Flash tool, I believe, has a way of you can see the history and go down to it. I don't think that's yet implemented in the Java tool, but that's something. It's an open source tool, and it's something that would be a good feature for someone to add. Similarly, in the Netherlands, there was a commercial mapping company that said, you know what, we're going to give OpenStreetMap all of our proprietary mapping data with the belief that, if people edit it and fix it and improve it, we will have a better product for our maps with OpenStreetMap editing it. So they released their data to OpenStreetMap. So how much data do we have? As I said, over 120,000 users now. Different slides have different counts because it's a very high rate of increase. There's over 22 million objects in the map tagged as highways. A highway could be as small as something between two intersections, or a highway can run, 100 kilometers. It depends on how long the person adding the data wanted to add it before breaking it up. There are over 28,000 pubs in the database. The two of the biggest mapping countries are the UK and Germany. Both people in both of those countries have done a phenomenal job of adding to the map. If you want to see good examples of OpenStreetMap maps at their best, look through Germany, some of the big cities, or look around London. And in both cases, I would say these countries love their pubs. In London, they have these mapping parties. Well, you know, they've gone to a pub and then have had a pub crawl and added all their pubs to the map.
How many universities
are? I don't have that. No, a lot of universities are. I showed you. Not a lot of universities are on the map. University students have the time to add to the map. And universities are nice that, you know, there are these campuses where you can draw all the buildings and all the little walkways. There's a couple of universities in the States that have actually taken their official university campus map based off of OpenStreetMap. One of them has a project, they even wrote a routing application where you can put in where on campus you want to go to and from, and if you want it to be a foot traveled or traveling by car, or only, you know, accessible, wheelchair-friendly routes, and it will find you the best route between these two buildings on campus. I don't have the name of that handy, but I have seen it. So where does the data go in OpenStreetMap? This is sort of a layout of the data flows. You're editing, someone will edit the data. They will upload it through a REST-style interface. You know, those XML blobs I showed you before with puts and gets to a Ruby on Rails infrastructure called sort of the Rails port. This Ruby on Rails program, you can download it off of the OpenStreetMap subversion server, handles turning those XML documents into and adding them to the Postgres database. The main editing database is Postgres. It used to be MySQL, but they switched. There is no PostGIS part of the main editing database. I'll show you the schema in a couple of slides. Then through XML again, the data is transferred to a PostGIS database instance, and mapping software. Mapnik is an example, but there are a few other packages that will do the same thing. We'll turn that data into a PNG image of a map that is served off the website. You can take the data and do other things with it other than generating PNGs. All the XML data that you can build your own, either Postgres or PostGIS database, is freely downloadable and accessible. So what does the schema look like? The big elements in OpenStreetMap are nodes, which is a point in space with a lat long, ways, which are collections of nodes, and then there's something called relations, which allow you to add tags to a whole bunch of nodes and a whole bunch of ways. And then when you go to add tags, tags are keys and values. You can add tags to nodes, and you can add tags to ways. You can also add tags to relations. So you would have a bunch of nodes. You'd connect them together with a way, if this is a road or a lake or a river. And then you might add some tags to the river name with the name of the river. And maybe at certain points along the river, there's something interesting, a rock that you want to name, or a dam. You can then identify that information on the individual nodes by adding tags to the node. As you see here, there are no complex geometries, no line strings or polygons in the database. It's all that. Everything is stored as a lat long. This is kind of different than how a lot of traditional GIS applications work. But this is why, right now, PostGIS isn't really being used on the main editing database. And you will also notice that the schema is kind of a big entity attribute value mess. And that's how it works. I didn't design it. In a few slides, I'll talk a bit about how it will look when you transfer it into PostGIS. But sort of pre-0.6, the version of the Rails port, or the API, because they both change at the same time, we're running now is 0.6. Up until, I believe, mid-April, we were running 0.5. 5 was based on MySQL with MySim, and I should correct the slide there, but often there were errors. Someone would upload, they would might delete this road, add a new road to replace it here. And halfway during the upload of that change, something would happen, the network would just get disconnected, the Rails code might have an error, any number of hiccups could happen. So we would end up with half changes. We might then have, you know, either 2 roads that really should be 1 or 1 road that shouldn't be 1. And the solution to this is transactions. And if you want to do transactions with MySQL, you need to go to InnoDB. And with InnoDB, you can't do a lot of things. I think it was text search that was the particular thing that was really needed that they couldn't do. But there were other things, and the admins decided that instead of banging their heads against the wall with MySQL, they would switch to Postgres. And that's what they did. In February, planning this upgrade, they decided that they needed a new database server. So they went out to the community and said, we need, 15,000, I can't remember if it was dollars or euros, for a database server. Can we raise some money? I think within a week or two, all the money had been raised through a mixture of private and corporate donations through PayPal to pay for the server. This is a picture of the actual database server that they bought. It's a 2 quad-core Xenon, 2.5 gigahertz. About 10 terabytes of storage, 300 gigs of RAM. Not a database server to set records compared to people running petabyte warehouses, but it's a respectable server. It's running Postgres 8.3. I'm sure at some point they'll upgrade. To do the conversion from MySQL to Postgres, they took the editing site down for a weekend and said they'll be, sorry, can't edit the map this weekend. They ran some migration scripts to convert the data. There were changes to the structure of the table at the same time, part of this API upgrade. They ran through that. I think they went down Friday morning, and probably by about Tuesday morning, everything was back up. So what kind of load are we putting through? PGStat, they are averaging about 7.5 million tuples fetched per second, which is a decent read rate. Only about 1,000 tuples inserted per second. So you can see this is a very read-heavy lower-write database. The database on disk is about 800 gigabytes. 800 gigabytes is the amount of disk space used on the server. I think the database is somewhere between 600 and 800 gigabytes. I'm not sure. There's probably a few other, data dumps on the server. In terms of table sizes, some of the larger tables, you had a question?
Go on and after that slide, I'll
ask. Okay. With OpenStreetMap, we both store the current version of all the roads and the historical version of everything. And they're divided up into different tables. So, we have about 900 gigabytes for the tags added to nodes current, and the historical version of that is about 211 gigabytes. A couple of tables around the 50 gigabyte range. And a few more in the historical ones around the 100 gigabyte range. So these are pretty decent sized tables. At the moment, they're not, as far as I know, using any partitioning. You saw those growth rate graphs earlier. I would expect the data to grow at a similar type of rate. So partitioning is probably something we will need to look at in the future. You got a question?
Yeah, what kind of backup solution do you have for that
data? I believe they're using PGDump. I'm not part of the admin team. And so what I sort of, some of the admin stuff is published. Some of it is just that the guys doing it do. They are not Postgres people. They don't have a Postgres background. But my understanding is they do PG dumps. I think they do them once a week. I don't know how long they take. Yes.
I believe there's a log of the changes.
Yes.
The request being sent to it, so they could restore it to an old version.
Yes, I'll talk a bit about that later. But because there's lots of people have copies of most of the data, because other people grab the data from OpenStreetMap. But I think for the live database, things like user accounts aren't always sent everywhere. I think they're backing everything up, but. That's what I think they're doing. So, planet dumps. You want your own copy of the database. Every week, they take all of the data in the database, the current data for the whole world, and dump it into an XML file, a compressed XML file, called a planet dump. You can also get planet dumps from other places where they break it out, and you can get an individual country. That will contain either all the data, all the nodes, all the ways, all the tags, anything, not raw unedited GPS points, but anything that makes up the map, current as of the date of the dump, in an XML that you can then restore into your own local database. There's a program called Osmosis. It lets you populate your own API in the table structure I mentioned below from one of these planet dumps. The other thing I should say about planet dumps before I go on is they also publish the changes. Every minute, 5 minutes, an hour, and day, they release a set of the changes in the last interval that have been made to the database. And you can take this change stream, it's an XML format, and apply it to your local database API through that Osmosis tool and bring your dump from last Tuesday up to date if you apply the daily change stream from each of the days. So doing this, many people have a complete copy of the planet's map on their local disk. I think you need, I don't know, probably 60 to 100 gigabytes. Actually, no, it probably would be, if you wanted the whole world with indexes, it would be that 600 gigabyte range that I meant. No, sorry, the 600 gigabyte number included the historical data. I believe, 100 gigabytes is probably sufficient for a planet, just the current data. So, I was showing you this data and the structure, and that database schema I showed you is not fun to query things from. What you probably really want to do is use PostGIS, because PostGIS gives you spatial queries, complex geometries, and the good news is you can do that. So there's a program called OSM to PGSQL. What it does is it takes these planet dumps and the minute diffs and populates a PostGIS database from it. It'll create polygons and lines in the tables with the data so you can do spatial queries. It will also take a lot of the popular attribute keys and values, or keys and value pairs from the nodes and ways, and add them as proper columns into the database schema, which will make querying much fun. To get an idea of what the schema will look like with PostGIS, there are polygons, roads, lines, and points. And each of these different geometry object, types of geometries, has its own table. What you get is a sparse table. This is not all of the columns that are in one of these tables. This is just a selection of columns that would fit on the slide. It's probably about half of them. And in any, for any given row, 80% of them are going to be null. If it's a highway, the highway column would have something in it, and the name column would have something in it. But, you know, nature, leisure, sport, residence, religion would probably all be null. It's possible that someone can tag a highway as having a religion, but normally you would only place churches and other places of worship would be tagged as having a religion. So you get your data into this schema that is sort of, you know, sparse tables, but much more fun to query. The line column is for things that are represented by lines, or well represented by lines. A road, a river, a trail would all be work well as a line. The points of interest mainly, as I mentioned, pubs before, amenities such as buildings, fire departments, police stations, places of worships. Usually these have names, and something, a column in the postgis table will tell you what type of point of interest this is. Polygons. Polygons in postgis, I believe, need to be closed. So any closed area, that elephant park I mentioned, would have, you know, a polygon out of it. Land use, sort of, is this a residential area, a commercial area, a park, forest, those all usually get polygons to represent them. Lakes are another big example of polygon-type data. So some things can be tagged as a polygon or as a point or maybe even as a line. You know, you can take any object in OpenStreetMap and add any tag to it. So you want to look, you know, you want to find a school. Is your school a point or a polygon? It depends how the person adding the data wanted to add it. Some people just add a point where the school is, call it a school, and move on. Other people will go to the aerial imagery, trace the outline of a building as a polygon, and call that the school. So when you're doing queries against your PostGIS database, you will have to query both the, you know, as an example, the polygon table and the point table to be sure that you find the school that you're looking for if you're doing a query on a school. Similarly, you might get hits in both, and you might get hits, multiple hits in both. I'll give an example of a query in a few slides. What we have here is sort of the structure of if you want to render your own maps. If you want to make your own map, you can get the data, run the map generating software, and come up with your own style. So what you would do is you'd have your PostGIS database with all of the mapping data. You would bring that into a program called Mapnik. Mapnik is map rendering software. You could also be using a map rendering software called Osma Renderer or something called Map Server. They all will work, and you can look at the different benefits of, or features of each. With most of these, you would then define a style in an XML document that describes what you want to show on the map, what colors roads should be, how big things should be, and then you can generate a map. You might generate your map as a PDF for printing. You might generate an SVG file. You can then import that into Illustrator and change it. Or you can generate these tiles that are PNGs. There's a program called Open Layers, which is that slippery map that lets you drag the map around on the OpenStreetMap website. If you want to have your own you know, Google-style, Yahoo-style slippery map, you can use Open Layers and Mapnik to do this. But you can do other things with GIST data. This here is a screenshot of a program called OpenJump. OpenJump is a Java-based GIST software. It will talk to PostGIS or read in a number of other GIST type of applications. And what it lets you do is select individual features, learn, see information and attributes about the feature off the map. GIST software has, you know, spatial queries on their own. I'm not going to talk much about that, other than to say, once your OpenStreetMap data is in PostGIS, any software that works with PostGIS, you can use to read the map data. You can use OpenJump, you can use QGIS, you can use UVDig, you could use GRASS if you were so inclined. Any of the GIS packages or applications that work with PostGIS can now be used to read your data. So we want to find a pub. So we're going to do a select from the point table, and I'm going to select it from a second point table where P, I'm looking for things that are tagged as an amenity called pub, and this U instance, I'm going to say, is the name University of Ottawa. And then I'm looking for instances where the pub, the P table, is close to the University of Ottawa. And I'm using the distance function in PostGIS, and I'm saying wherever the distance between these two is less than one. Here, one, not exactly sure what one refers to. It is not quite in degree of latitude or degree of longitude, because the Earth is an ellipse, and we're like working with square maps. And so the distance, when you're using GIS software, you have to be working with a spatial reference system that just talks about how the model of your Earth works. This query is being done with the WGS84 system, which is what GPSs use and which is what OpenStreetMap uses. So roughly, you know, you can think a degree of latitude or a degree of longitude is the area or the distance where this query will run through. What I'm doing at the top is then I'm converting the distance output to meters. So which will be more nice to look at the output. And we look at our results. And this is what this is the data as of a few weeks ago. You will notice that the rural oak is not on here. And the pub that most of you, you know, I'm sure many people went to pubs the past couple days, and those are probably not on here either. The closest pub it finds is this elephant in the castle that is apparently 500 meters away. And it found some pubs 48 kilometers away. But there's clearly more than 12 pubs within 48 kilometers. No map is complete. But with OpenStreetMap, the completeness varies a lot by where you are and what you're looking. You will probably find neighborhoods where every single pub has been mapped. But you're probably going to find neighborhoods like this one where there's a lot of pubs. This is next to a university that need to be mapped. And this applies to any type of feature with OpenStreetMap. If you're going to be doing spatial queries and trying to use the data for something, you have to remember that there's a good chance not all the data is going to be there. And without looking at the map and doing some checks on you for the area you're interested in, you won't know how complete the map is for any particular area. And if what you want to do, one of the things you can do with data in this format is start, you know, doing either statistical analysis or applications that find things. But if you're doing this, you have to make sure that you have to understand the limitations of the data for the areas you're working with. And the only way to know that is to actually look at what you get. So clearly, you know, around Ottawa, there's a lot of work to be done. In terms of some of the constructs, the basic PostGIS constructs that are useful, ST intersects finds if two geometries will intersect at any point. ST Union will allows you to combine multiple geometries into one. So if you're selecting, you might have a subselect to select from points and another one to select from polygons, and you might union them up to come up with one result set of the two tables. There's also the distance that will show you the distance between any two points. I'm not going to go into much more detail on spatial queries. I think there's a talk on that later this afternoon. So what have I talked about? You know, you have to ask how free is your map. There's different ways of evaluating this. The other thing I should mention about OpenStreetMap is that the license is the Creative Commons share-alike license, which means you can take the data, you can change it, you can do what you want with it, except that if you make changes to the data and you publish any resulting images or derivative works, you must share your raw data changes. It's the GPL for data. Some map source, such as the public domain maps, I mentioned some of the government ones, are actually more free than OpenStreetMap in this sort of just as the BSD license is really more free than the GPL. But that's the license the project has picked, and you should be aware of it. If you're changing the data, you are expected to share the results back. I told you a bit about how OpenStreetMap works and was founded, and we sort of looked a bit about how PostGIS can be used with the data. So now, if there's any questions, I can take those.
I wonder if there's slides you had an example of a query running against OpenGIS OpenStreetMap. And I was wondering, is there a publicly accessible interface with that people can run SQL queries directly?
In terms of in my slides, yeah, that query we were looking at.
Like that?
That, yeah, this.
There's no.
I'm not aware of anyone having a public interface that lets you submit an arbitrary PostGIS query for it. Depending on if you're only interested in a small area, you know, you can download. You can probably find a 100 megabyte planet file and just build your own database pretty quickly and run your own queries. If you want to run queries against the entire world. No one that I know of has offered that. There is, though, something called the XAPI, where there is not a PostGIS interface for it, but someone has imported the world's data set into a, I don't know if it's an XML database or another freeform database, but you can do sort of XPath-style queries, you know, give me all of the ways and nodes that are tagged with amenity equals pub in some bounding box or the entire world. And there's a link to that off the. If you go to the OpenStreetMap wiki and search for XAPI, you'll get to that. But you can't do SQL queries. It has its own query language. If someone wanted to donate a server and some disk space and lots of CPU power, I'm sure it could be done.
What problems do you have with Postgres?
What
problems do you have with Postgres? What do you want from developers?
They only switched to the Postgres about a month ago. So, a lot. You know, the first couple of weeks, there were a lot of growing pains in that they upgraded the API for clients to talk to the data to the web services changed. The schema changed. The underlying database changed, and all the software in the middle changed. They're only now sort of working through some of those issues. One big issue they're still having is that for these minute, every 5 minutes they would like to generate a change set from the last 5 minutes. The way they did this with MySQL is they ran a query, show me all nodes that have a timestamp that have changed since the, you know, between 12 and 1205. The problem with doing that now is that some transactions last longer than 5 minutes. Part of the API change was you can now do bulk uploads. You can upload, 50,000 edits at one time. And the database, the server might take 10 minutes to process, the work behind before the transaction commits. The 5-minute diff that runs in the middle will not include that because the transaction hasn't committed. It's not visible. The next 5-minute diff won't include that either because the timestamp on the column is, 1202 when the row was inserted. I believe it's when the row was inserted. I don't think they're using now, which would be even worse when the transaction started. So they're trying to find a solution to that other than having to bite the bullet and add triggers and use queues. They will have a problem with an in-place upgrade. Well, or they can take another weekend of downtime. But, in 6 months, that 800 gigs is probably going to be a couple of terabytes. And upgrading could be an issue.
So did you change the query from MySQL to Postgres? Did you optimize it?
They have not done a lot of optimization that I know of. Before they went out, they sort of said, well, they have no way, they don't have a good way of simulating the load. So they said, before they went out, they said, we'll launch, see how it goes, and fix problems after they happen. Which, in a commercial environment where you have an SLA, you can't do that. But when you're an open source project, mostly being run by volunteers, for volunteers, you actually can do that. And if the map's not ready, if the map is running slow for a few hours or a few weeks, or there's a bit of downtime every day, it's not the end of the world. No one's going to ask for a refund.
When you guys imported Tiger, I'm not sure if Geobase is the same way, but did you maintain the address information?
For Tiger, I don't believe either Geobase or Tiger has yet imported the address information. We do plan on doing with Geobase, and I think for Tiger, that's a project that needs someone to take it and do the import. Any other questions?
With the actual database structure, is it possible to do some routing applications?
Yes. Yes, the PostGIS structure is very difficult to do routing, I would think, just because a lot of those nodes have been merged. But there are routing applications that do work with the data. There's an application that runs on embedded devices called Navit, which is a car navigation system that uses OpenStreetMap data. They take the planet dumps and convert it to their own format. I believe there's a program called Traveling Salesman that some of the OpenStreetMap people have been working on to do routing. So there are ways of doing routing with the data.
Similar to that, you maintain the direction of the street?
Yeah. Streets can be tagged as one. Streets are assumed to go both ways, but any street you can tag as one way. So some streets that are, like a divided highway, would often have two streets that are each one way. But a normal road is probably done just as one. I think the convention is that the order in which the nodes are drawn, the nodes have an order as they make up the way.
So if you go to a mapping party and you go to a pub brawl, you have to make sure to walk on the right side of the sidewalk when you're...
Anything else? Thank you.
GPS units
depends. Well, what do I use? I use my FreeRunner.
I, I'm using Motion X on the is an app on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I find it's extremely accurate. I'm wondering whether that's